Hey everyone, welcome to the inaugural podcast of Mashing In. I'm one of your hosts, Stefan Turcotte. Beside me is
Brian Tesselin.
And Ed Kay.
So this is a podcast about beer. We happen to be based in Victoria, BC, so we're going to have more of a West Coast Canada focus to us, but we'll try and spread our wings a little bit and get around. So just at the start of our first episode, we thought we should introduce ourselves a little bit and tell you who we are and why we care about beer. Why don't we start with you, Brian?
I got into beer, craft beer, when I first moved to Vancouver, about 2011, 2012, and it really struck with Granville Island being what was the newer, more independent slash different beers than the macro brands. Obviously, that's changed now. But I moved into East Vancouver, Nanaimo and Dundas, at around 2013, just months after Parallel 49 opened. And friends of mine took me there and really kind of sparked my entire craft beer love, that variety and different style that, you know, you can branch off into than just, you know, your simple lagers and your simple ales that I've been used to for so long. Since then, I've been in the food and beverage industry as a chef for close to 20 years now, and I recently took a job selling beer, and that just even elevated my love for it even more and just showcased, you know, what that really is no limits for anything in this business, which is kind of cool. But it's also given me a lot more to think about of where the industry is going.
And for the record, you love beer or you hate beer?
I love beer. Some people may say I love to hate beer.
Oh, okay. And how about you, Ed? What kind of brought you to craft beer and what keeps you coming back?
Well, I drank a lot of beer as a teenager in the UK, but it was English beer. So lagers, Fosters, lots of ESBs and all that kind of stuff. But then when I moved here, like, you know, I got a taste for, like, that kind of soured me on beer. Not sour beers, but for a while. And then I kind of got into craft beer with, like, Phillips and VIB, and then went to, like, Hoyne and Driftwood, and then, you know, dug my way deep into that kind of craft beer burrow, and now, like, you know,
there's no escape.
So far up my own ass now, there's no escape.
Okay, and what, you work in the industry at all, or?
I don't know. I have a blog, and I also work called Bring Your Port to the Slaughter. Check it out. And I also do some stuff for What's Brewing, do their events column every week for the Hotline email. Yeah, so.
You could say you're in the industry, just not monetarily successfully in it.
Exactly.
And it's a good way. You do love beer?
Oh, I love beer, yeah.
And okay. Stefan, who are you?
I'm Stefan Turcotte, and
I'm unsure about that.
Yeah. I got into beer a long time ago. Weird way. My dad got me into Ubering a little bit. He was a home winemaker, and then I did a couple of Ubers with him when I was in uni, and then dropped it for a while. And then while I was abroad teaching in Asia, I kind of had to learn how to brew again out of necessity because the beers were so shite. so started home brewing and, like, fell down the whole rabbit hole of home brewing and craft beer, and have not kind of come up for air since. It's been about 10 years of just solid home brewing, professional brewing, and thinking and drinking beer.
And now what do you do?
Now I am one of the co-owners and head brewer at Le Sauvage Brewing here in Victoria, BC, where we happen to be seated at the moment. Mm-hmm. And
I guess the big question is, do you love beer?
I do love beer, yes. So now we're going to lead into one of our segments. we haven't named this segment yet, but basically every week that we record the podcast, we're each going to bring a story from the world of craft beer, talk about the story, give a synopsis, and then give our comments and opinions on it. So this week I'm going to go first. I picked up a story. It's about a week old now, but it kind of caught my eye. It's not a Canadian or BC-centric story, but it just came out. Bud Light has changed their packaging, and they've decided to add nutrition labels. And I know this is not a great way.
They even have like commercials for it now.
Okay,
like, I haven't that's seen those. Like, and it's like a big push.
Okay.
On all the, because I was watching football this weekend, and yeah. Just it's like the biggest thing since sliced bread they're making it out to be.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it, you can just look it up in an image search on Google. But it's like a giant nutrition label that you would normally find like on
like Coca-Cola.
Yeah, on a pack of like mm-hmm. chips or something like that. Like it's a big rectangular box and they're putting it like front and center on the side of the 12 pack boxes, and so it's a pretty big label.
What are they listing? Did it say that?
Yeah, so I'll just bring it up here on the computer so you guys can see it. But they're listing the ingredients, water, barley, rice, and hops, and then the serving, and then the calories, I think is the main one that they're trying to push this for, because...
you got me on calories.
Yeah.
I don't need to know how many calories are in my barley wine and Imperial Stout.
So in this article, Budweiser is, or AB InBev, is claiming that younger consumers care about this. I'll just read you the quote from them. It says, this is from the article, "We want to be transparent and give people the thing that they are used to seeing," said Andy Goler, vice president of marketing for Bud Light. Goler said the brand's research showed younger drinkers in particular want to know what's in their beer. They have grown up really in tune to ingredients, he said. So I guess they're saying that younger people want to know the calories and the ingredients. It's just funny when you look at the label, because the total fat is 0000, total carbs is 6.6 grams per serving, and the protein is 0.9 grams. So like the only thing of any significance really is the calories because of the alcohol.
110 calories, though. I mean, people went through that whole 100-calorie snack a while ago. I could have just been chugging beers.
It would have been a Bud Light.
Yeah, but, you know.
But it seems like a waste of time and effort, because literally there's two pieces of information that are completely relevant on that entire...
Yeah, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up was I don't have a problem with it per se, except for the fact that the ingredients don't list one of the major ingredients of beer. Yeast,
that's
water, barley, rice, and hops. Like you're missing, like 300 years ago, they didn't know about yeast. Like
yeah.
they obviously added yeast to this beer. Now, maybe they're saying that like there's 0.00% or grams of yeast left in the beer. I'm not sure, but it's very strange to see an ingredient list for beer that doesn't include yeast.
That is odd.
Are they using yeast?
So it's just...
Is it just flavored sugar water with rice?
Well, you wouldn't be completely wrong about that.
Well, it's weird because, like, I don't know the process. They've got to be using yeast, but with rice, like, it's a fermentable too, right? Like, it's a different kind of fermentable, like using koji and stuff like that. So are they maybe just extracting a fermentation off the rice instead of actually using a yeast?
As far as I know, they just do, like, a cereal mash on the rice to make it 100% fermentable. It basically just dries out the beer. It's 100% fermentable sugar you're adding. It's also cheap.
Yeah, it's a great filler to make
a
whole whack of beer.
It just, again, seems odd that they didn't list yeast in the ingredients and that they were happy to list rice. And if you look, like they list it now on the can under Bud Light, in big things it says hops, barley, water, rice. Like they're like really highlighting the fact now that they use rice.
You ever see the old cans of Bud Light though? They're plain as hell. See what they're doing? There's got to be some sort of problem here. That Bud is like scrounging to get a different name for them, because they've got to be losing money
to do this.
So, not to do this in general with the whole craft beer scene really exploding, especially in the past. Like, I mean, it's always been very big in States, but for it to be exploded in Canada now, and like there's a heavy amount of people buying Bud Light.
Yeah.
You see, like, look at how they have the Anheuser-Busch, like, logo. That was never on Bud Light in that forefront before.
Yeah.
It was always just Bud Light. And it was just like, I'm drinking five 12s Bud Light tonight with my buddy. And that was the biggest thing. Now they're trying to, like, pretty up almost the label. Mm-hmm. And with this low-cal push, it seems like a lot of bigger brewery types are doing that now.
Yeah.
I've got three beers or a couple beers in the portfolio now that are like advertising low-cal.
So in looking at this article, I saw a couple other articles and they were like, you know, by like bigger food websites saying like craft brewers better watch out because so they were the angle that they were kind of shooting at was that this was a problem for craft brewers by them doing this. Huh. Because like if you're putting out an imperial stout with lactose and, you know, hazelnuts and all of this stuff in it, all these other adjuncts, like you're going to end up at like, you know, 300 calories a serving for some of these beers.
If not more.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that the fat tug? I don't want to say joke, but comparison, it's like it's got more calories than a Big Mac or something like that.
The amount of alcohol. You mean in a bomber?
In a bomber.
Yeah.
I remember looking up Herminator years ago, and that's like 5 or 6 or something like that, 100. According to Beer Advocate or Rate Beer or whatever the hell it was. And I was just like, close website. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to drinking.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll put that one to bed. And
cool, cool.
We can kind of move on to the next one. Anyone want to put an article forward?
So I brought an article that's been talked about kind of in the forefront with like Sierra Nevada, but it's called hashtag flagship. February, and Steve Beaumont kind of came out and is doing a ton of promotion for it and wants licensees or establishments to sort of take it on and do events promoting flagship beers. And this is going to, like, you know, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale being, you know, that beer that puts you into craft beer that wasn't your normal macro brand, that was something that, you know, got you into something more independent and, you know, a bit better in your taste buds. It's like it's like Fat Tug. It's like Coin Pilster. It's like, it's Blue Buck.
Yeah.
And something I was talking about with Ed, and I can read more about this article later, is just like, what really makes a flagship beer a flagship? In your opinion, like, what is that?
I assume because the brewery says it so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, they set out to make Fat Tug. They were going to make Fat Tug whatever it was. They were going to make Fat Tug, they weren't going to change it no matter what.
Yeah.
It became, but they weren't, that wasn't their first beer. A flagship is something you launch with, isn't it?
No. I don't think it has the same definition anymore.
Now it's something that's leading the charge for your
It's what you're
brewery.
Most known for, I'd imagine. Yeah. Like the core beer that you're most known for.
I would
available all the time.
That's what I was going to say. If it's a year-round offering, like, because I don't think you would say that, like, a brewery has to have only one flagship,
mm-mm.
right? They can have
There's
four.
A few, yeah.
And I think I saw Sierra Nevada as like, you know how breweries put out like a calendar that shows like when different beers, like when their seasonals are coming
out? I saw that today.
Yeah, and Sierra Nevada had only 4 year-round offerings. So I would say that the flagship would mean they have 4 flagship brands.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Right.
So
yeah.
In light, with this aspect going, it's like, I was like, well, breweries aren't, think they're setting out to be having a flagship beer when other beers take over as their flagship. This is sort of like a extended from this talk too, because like I don't think breweries like Driftwood, I would keep using them. I don't even think breweries like Phillips thought that Red Truck or not Red Truck, but Blue Buck was going to be a flagship beer for them.
So my question about this would be, what is the need for this? What are we losing, or what is the problem that hashtag flagship February is trying to fix?
I spoke to a friend of ours who was also a beer rep a while ago, and he was telling me that he switched to just drinking flagship beers because from speaking with breweries, that was the best thing for them. Well, it's their money maker essentially, because they have constant supply of ingredients. They don't have to change it up. They just brew the same thing again and again and again. It's what the biggest profit margin is on. As if they're making a new seasonal, like every week or something, like a lot of local breweries now. It's constant new ingredients, massive amounts of hops, etc. And the profit margin drops vastly. So I think that's part of it.
Okay.
And I think another part of it is that if people just keep drinking these seasonals, the fear is that, you know, Sierra Nevada could stop, you know, like, oh, well, this Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is no longer profitable. Let's take it out of our lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Just replace it with one of these seasonals and keep flipping it around.
To play devil's advocate, though, like, I mean, if I'm just as a beer consumer, why do I feel like I have to drink something to help the brewery's bottom line? Like, there's going to be a brewery that's going to fill the void that I want to drink.
Especially,
and,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. When there's how many breweries in North America right now? Like, and if I want to drink hazy IPA every day and Phillips doesn't have a hazy IPA in their flagship lineup, like,
yeah,
what am I supposed to do? I should feel obligated to drink flagships because it's good for their
business. I think it's more based around we keep using the word flagship, but it's a core base, and
yeah.
And the core, like, you have a few core beers that you make that you're keeping in constant rotation.
Yeah,
you've done variants of them, but ideally you want to keep having at least those four beers to kind of. I don't know if you're having it's a money making, or it's just I like these beers. I feel that they're a great rendition of my style and what I like to make, and that's why I'm keeping them. I feel that that's the same thing for a lot of breweries, and I think what this whole concept of hashtag flagship February is. Some people feel that there's a rift in the industry right now, and they feel that the newer, or at least a lot of the beer drinkers, the craft beer drinkers coming in, want to just drink a new beer only. There's been that argument about that with the Untappd, that it's just to earn a badge, and that no one actually has a six pack of a one core beer in their fridge that they drink all the time.
As an avid craft beer drinker myself, I like to try the new stuff, but I personally, in my craft beer journey over the last couple of years, I'd say about 2 years ago, I just wanted to grab almost anything that was new because I just wanted to try it. I've since cooled off on that a ton and have gravitated back towards certain four packs of tall cans that I know are reasonably priced and well brewed and are not the new hit thing, and I like them. So, like,
Yellow Dog in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, I'm not saying that flagship February is a bad thing. I just think that the problem here that's trying to be fixed is not something people should be trying to manipulate, maybe?
Well, from a lot of the comments, and, I mean, the article in Forbes you can find online, and I can repost it on my Facebook for people, too, and the link on my Instagram. But it's just, I think people are thinking the industry's going in a different direction. And I've had conversations with a lot of people about, you know, I've worked at a liquor store and I've worked behind the bar and I've also been a beer rep, and I'm in the trenches every day with it in different avenues. So I see a lot of the different realms of it. And just like, you know, why is this beer not selling here? Well, people, we only sell Pilsner here at this liquor store. Like, we're not going to sell anything else. Okay, well, how do these people even know what it is if they don't taste it? But, you know, there's that big rift between, I thought that there's a 50-50 split right now of beer drinkers that are still like, I only drink this beer. I love this beer. And it's not like old people or young people. It's a crazy, like, massive demographic of people. Like, I see people drinking Fat Tug of all ages, of all walks of life. It's insane. And then I'd say half of the industry of the consumers buying now are people that are like, well, I can go and try a new beer every day. I want to do that. And it might not be a badge thing, but I think the sheer, like, people just love variety.
Yeah.
And it's just, I have a choice that I can try something new.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, let me just finish this one.
No, sure.
I feel that in my position, I'm kind of like a middle ground on that, because I really like trying a lot of new things. But like you were talking to Stefan, like, lately there's, you can't trust a lot of the newer beers that are coming in. I don't even want to invest my money. But we know, like, and not necessarily being on a whale sense, like Cantillon and Tilton come out, like, I'm always going to buy that beer. Like, that's not my flagship beer buying. But I am. What? Yeah, right? Like,
moved to Belgium.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Drink Underbergs and...
Yeah, did you know that in Belgium it's just flagship year?
Yeah, yeah, that's all they have. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not... there is no other such thing as... Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. No. So I think, like, you know, trying... I do gravitate towards the same beers, and some of them are high-end. Like, I not because I rep them, but, like, Aslan, like, six-packs, I like drinking Aslan.
Yeah,
I like good. Those beers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where the rift is that people just don't even know what good product is.
That's fair. No, I am one of those assholes that uses Untappd. But I use it, like... There was this thing, a bunch of people pasted it on Facebook. They were like, oh, post your Untappd list from last year. And they were like, I tried 500 new beers, and...
Did you not die?
450 of them were new beers. Mine was like 2,500 beers. And I was like, oh shit. But 500 of them were repeats. So my repeats were more than those people that drank new beers. Okay. So I'm like, and I drank Fat Tuck like 25 times or something or more.
Do you
amount of times
drink?
I could be bothered to untap it. No, if I've had it like a million times, sometimes like whatever. But I mean, I do drink a lot of repeat beers, but I do see what people mean because like I use it so I can learn about beer essentially. So I'm like, what did I like about this beer? It forces me to take notes.
Yeah.
Because I see people who check them in, they're just like, tick that one off basically, or like, cool beer.
Yeah.
Or it's like a coffee stout and they're like, love the coconut. And you're like, what?
You what? Just to get back, I'm curious what the comment is. Is it like, so you're just reading the comments online. Is there a controversy around it, or is it just everyone has their opinion of whether it's a good thing or a bad thing? Or I'm just curious what the reaction is.
I pulled this off of, so I pulled the, I won't say who it is, but I pulled the Forbes article off of someone I know on Facebook. And he...
is a proponent of it.
Of the article, you mean?
Of Flagship February.
Yes.
Okay.
So and he posted in his article a very heartfelt, positive quote of what he felt, you know, the best part about this was. A lot of people have commented on that, which is great, and there's a few things, and there's a few people who, you know, are back and forth about it, but a few owners who don't really have a flagship-esque program at their establishments,
yeah,
have different ideas about a flagship idea for that, and feels like, you know, like you said, in Belgium it's flagship all year round.
Yeah,
and that
if you pick great beer, yeah,
in
yeah.
great beer, but in this town we know for a fact that it's flagship all year round.
This
it's
town,
not just flagship
yeah.
February here. It's all year round.
Yeah,
it's
in,
those,
in
those
Victoria. Yeah,
especially yeah, and I know I think Vancouver is changed a bit because there isn't that huge identity, but some people do gravitate more towards flagship breweries as opposed to beers. Whereas here, you see, it's a beer.
I do get a feeling that this is aimed more at the U.S. than anything, because if you look at the beers they're recommending, they're like Sierra Nevada, like I don't know what else you have.
There was
Firestone or something.
Cane Brewing was on here too.
There's a lot of stuff that is just US brand. I couldn't see one Canadian brand on there. So I feel like it's
Forbes. It's an American article.
Yeah.
And Beaumont constantly is talking about a lot of American things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just gonna buy some 4-packs of Steamworks Flagship IPA.
That's
because
a good
I like
one.
It. And it's
very
apt. And it's flagship.
Well, that's
yeah.
the thing. Like, so people would come up with those comments about, you know, what makes it a flagship, or like, is it a flagship beer? But that beer is really good.
Yeah.
And that has stayed the test of time as being a really good beer.
Oh, I was watching Liverpool at the Irish Times like a couple of weeks ago, and it must have been a fresh keg because it was so good. And the rep was in here, and we were telling him how good the keg was, and he went down there to go try it because he's like, that must have been a fresh beer, because they have it's a hard brew to even though it's their flagship. It's hard for them to keep it, make sure that it's fresh at all the accounts. And it's a, you know, it's a hazy,
it's a hazy
IPA.
Hazy style,
The one time I've tried it that wasn't bad was out of a steel camping pan at a Korean restaurant.
Remember that? Was that
Chimek? Yeah.
Yeah.
This tastes a little metallic.
Yeah. Because they put it in aluminum.
That's
rats.
What they, in Korea, that's normally what you serve Makgeolian. You don't serve beer or anything else in. It's meant for that one drink.
Were we there together?
Yeah, we were. And it paired very well with silkworm larvae.
Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Fondegi.
Beautiful.
What did we have? We had Jose from Elsmith?
Yeah, we did,
That was fucking
great. It quite the night.
Okay. So we're getting a little bit long here. So let's hear what your article is, Ed.
Okay. Well, mine is, I think, by the Competition Bureau of Canada, which is, to quote their mandate, they're an independent law enforcement agency that ensures that Canadian businesses and consumers prosper in a competitive and innovative marketplace. So they're going to government authorized, kind of. So they're kind of like an anti-monopoly kind of thing, just fair competition between people. And they propose that BC liquor laws are antiquated, specifically the fact that you have to buy from like BC liquor store or BC liquor distribution, essentially.
Yeah.
And you can't just buy directly from a brewery or from a micro distillery.
And pay tax on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just go to a liquor store and buy stuff, which a lot of local places here and in Vancouver got seized on. It was mostly on the spirit side. They bought a bunch of spirits and the government did a sting, confiscated everything. But they're proposing that, particularly with breweries, for example, like if you could buy straight from the brewery, it would drive prices down, increase the variety that you could get at bars and restaurants and that kind of stuff, which, I mean, I don't think many people could disagree with, except I do know a few people that work for, like, LGB, essentially, like, liquor distribution, and, you know, it would do a lot of people out of jobs if the government was like, yeah, sure.
Well, but they just took over cannabis, so I think they got lots of work over there.
It's going to fill their hands, for sure. But, yeah, liquor laws here are kind of crazy, really. Like, when I moved here from the UK, I was like, what the hell is going on? This is weird.
Yeah. It's only here, too, I think. It's only in BC that it's really antiquated, this was what you're saying. It's very archaic, and it's just basically the government wanting to
take their
cut as best as possible. Because there's almost a point where they get a double cut from it in some of the ways that you have to like sell it, and then it goes back to them, and they like, and then you resell the beer, and they get the PST from that again from the sales. And it's, you're just like you're just taking so much money off it. So it makes sense the government would want to keep that the way that we have, the way our government is right now.
I mean, for us as a brewery, it's kind of ridiculous because, like, let's say that we wanted to sell a new brand or, like a beer that we're making in a new size of keg or a new size of package. We have to register that with them as a SKU, SKU.
Yeah.
And that could take up to 6 weeks for them to process. So, like, and it, like, I mean, most of us are not trying to hide alcohol. We want to just make it, sell it, and report to them exactly what we're doing. So this whole process of having to take 6 weeks to approve a new size of container, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, what are they going to approve? Like, of course it's yes. Like,
just with the growing, how the industry is growing, now just changed the whole fact, just with the whole tall cans. Like, tall cans before were like, no one could fathom anything, and all of a sudden, every beer you see now is in a tall can.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, if you don't register that as a single SKU, as a single can, as a SKU, and it's a four-pack, technically, the stores aren't allowed to sell it as a single SKU.
Even though they do.
Yeah. So they almost register it, and I don't want to talk too much about that, but like, so like, just like, but then it causes products to go bad. Cause product to stay, and it's already volatile product, so it's just no focus on the small business aspect of it. And you know, we should be able to make what we're making, and we should be able to have the mass variety, but it should be able to sell quickly.
That's fair. Yeah.
Okay. I think we're gonna wrap up the new segment.
Sounds good.
Good chat. And we'll head on to the next.
Cool.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to jump into a second weekly segment. This segment, again, has no name yet, but we're basically going to choose either a beer style or a beer ingredient or a brewery or some sort of theme for, and then we're each going to bring in a beer that adheres to that theme. So we didn't know what to do for the first time, so we just threw out an ingredient. And the ingredient for this week is corn, which is a very strange choice. I'm sorry.
I think it makes sense where people like Bud Light putting. Yeah, I expect that to have corn in just twice, though.
Also, I have been told I can be quite corny.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't. So this week, we each brought in a single beer. They all have corn as an ingredient in the beer. The weird thing about corn, though, is that a lot of people are generally confused because people would think that like corn in the beer leads to corn flavor in the beer, and it's actually not true.
It's mostly an active filler for most of the
beer. Yeah, so if your beer smells like creamed corn, or tastes like creamed corn, that is most definitely an off flavor in the beer, and that is DMS or dimethyl sulfide. This is usually produced on the hot side of brewing. It's generally present in light lagers, so it just happens that a lot of the beers that have corn in them happen to have the off flavor of corn flavor, not because of the corn, but because of actually the pale malt in the beer. So like your German Pilsner malt is one of the main culprits of it. One of the ways you can get rid of it is by a super vigorous boil for like 60 to 90 minutes. So you can generally deal with it on the hot side. It can also rear its ugly head. I've had it a few times. If bars are really, really bad at cleaning their lines, the lines can get infected with lacto and pedio. And those lines can actually give DMS to a finished beer.
Just DMS or other actual like off flavors too?
There are other, like the beer can come out sour if it sat in the line a while. But like one of the, a brewery that shall not be named that I went to had the beer off the tank, was great, had it off their lines, full of corn and DMS. Sure enough, I was able to look at the lines in the fridge and you could see the film on the inside of the lines. So that was definitely, normally though, if it's a packaged product, the most of that is not infected with lactopedia. So it would most generally be a malt and hot side issue that you would have that. So it's weird. The light beers that tend to have corn tend to have a little bit of corn flavor in them, not due to the corn.
Yeah.
like you said, corn is a filler. BJCP is a good place to start with this because it's the beer judge certification program and it classifies all these things. I went through it today and was able to find that like this corn-like flavor or DMS is allowable in six of the styles, all of which are lagers. We've got American Light Lager, American Lager, Cream Ale, which is very low levels, and then, International Pale Lager, Amber Lager, Dark Lager. So all of those beers, as well as there's a couple British beers that they're saying that a little bit of corn-like flavor, like a very low amount, is acceptable. A small, small amount of DMS. So on the flip side of this, what we've brought in, we hope, is not too much DMS, but using corn as an ingredient in the beer.
And drinking one for the past half an hour.
That's right. And as an ingredient in corn, there's a couple of different ways you can use the corn in the beer. There's like malted corn, corn meal, flake maize, corn grits. You can use popcorn, but it floats in the mash, so don't bother. Corn sugar is actually very, very commonly used because corn sugar has essentially no flavor, and so a lot of people use it to bottle condition their beers.
Yeah, or that ABV in the boil.
Yeah, the only problem with upping the ABV like that is it tends to thin out the body of the beer a little bit. One of the reasons that American they weren't even Americans at that time. They were German immigrants started using corn in the beers was because there's two types of base malt. In Europe, they had two-row barley. And then in the States, their barley was six-row barley, and it was much higher in protein, and it was much much more viscous in the mash. And so they actually supplemented their mash with corn to help dry out the beer and also clarify it because they wanted the clear lager beers that they were making in Germany in the States. So they started using corn as a way to lighten it and also clear up their lagers.
Okay.
Hopefully you don't let any beer labels tell you that their corn beer tastes like corn because of the corn.
Yeah.
Without further ado, I'll let you do the honors. Brian, tell us what you brought and please
not
be corny.
So I represent a company called Deep Cove Brewing out of North Vancouver. They are about a six-year-old brewery, and they have been making really well-made, well-rounded products since then.
There we go. That's the sound.
This is their lager, and ideally this is probably a flagship beer.
And
this is a flaked corn and wheat mix.
Wheat.
Lager.
Yes. Lager.
Wheat.
Hmm. Okay.
Interesting.
It's crystal clear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's well rounded. This one is advertised. They use cashmere hops with it. It doesn't have a hell of a lot of hop character, but it's crystal clean, very light. I sometimes get some melon off of it, fresh cantaloupe flavors to it. They advertise a bit of light grass and light citrus, and they advertise melon. I get the melon a lot.
I get a little bit of that in the flavor.
This is it's not as dry as you would think. It does have a bit of sweetness in it, but it's still a very easy drinking lager. It's not super bitter. It's really well rounded, and for people who are into drinking a lot more just the macro or even just like Lucky or Sneak Weasel or anything like that, this is a really great product that actually is a great go-to for just a straight-up lager. And I mean, a lot of breweries are making this quality product. Because we're doing corn today, this was sort of like the best rendition I had to at least have a starter beer.
I actually really like it. I don't like lagers. But I can tell it's dry hopped.
Yeah, it does have some hop character. And also, like, I find it doesn't smell overly lagery. Like, also, it doesn't have some of the sulfur notes and things that you sometimes get in poorly made lagers. So.
Mm-hmm.
You get like some of that toasty effect of some of the malt.
Yeah, I get a little bit of that.
Unrested lager.
Yeah. But I get the breadiness and the flavor for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
But it's, like, you're right with the dry hop. It's nice. It's not aggressively hoppy. But it's, I find some people who are still, when I just do some tastings for beer, that if they're macro lager drinkers, especially some of the ones like that we see here frequently in Victoria, that this is too bitter for them.
Is too bitter?
Yeah. I've had people like, no, too bitter. They say too hoppy, obviously, which they mean bitter.
Too bitter, yeah.
However, I've had a lot of people on the other side that do drink like lagers and like pilsners and like kolsches, and they're just like, this is great. I get this again.
Not that I'm a big proponent of IBUs, but there are no IBUs listed on this. Do you happen to know, or know that it's too bitter for them? I'm just wondering because...
That's maybe something we can talk about in a podcast later, is the whole IBU scale and where it lies is actually being relevant to selling the beer itself.
And a beer like this, though, I would say it is fairly relevant. Because there are not a lot of like other things to get in the way of the IBU number. So like that would,
That's true.
It's I would say it's under 20.
Yeah.
But
I just was curious.
I'm not
curious
sure
what they
listed here. I've got it here coming up right now.
I like that it's not like massively carbonated.
Mm.
It's crisp and effervescent for sure, but it's not like...
You could have a couple and it's good.
Do you know what they dry? Oh, it says dry hopped.
With cashmere.
Cashmere, yeah.
12 IBUs. Okay. Flake maize and two rope. The website, don't listen to the website right now on things because the cans is something different because the website is Magnum and traditional.
I guess they changed things up.
Yeah, they might have done a bit, and it also says it's a 4.7%, but on the cans it's 5.
So are you guys tasting the corn for sure?
No. So with corn though, like it being a filler, it's going to impart, like you said, corn flavor, but it's going to impart like this. The sweetness I think comes a bit more from the corn of this beer.
I'm not sure. Everything I've been reading has led me to believe that the corn should taste as dryness, so the opposite of sweetness. It's really odd though, because like when you tell someone that like these are the ingredients in a beer, people just like look for those.
Yeah.
Right? So like if you said to someone, yeah, I used 50% wheat in this, right? Like people start looking for that, wheaty
that
flavor.
Toasty,
Yeah. Whereas some of the time it doesn't necessarily taste like that. Like I personally don't think like an American style wheat beer tastes anything like like wheat.
No. Yeah, no.
I haven't had American style wheat beer in a long time, so it's even hard to compare.
Yeah, and they're not very common anymore. Widmer Hefeweizen, even though it's called Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
That's us too.
Is a good example of an American wheat beer.
Sure, go grab some of those and try them one day.
In fact, news story, I heard that they just closed their downtown pub in Portland.
Oh, really?
The other day, yeah.
Oh, damn.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same group that does Omission and Kona.
Oh, really?
But they're not closing Widmer's or anything. They just closed their downtown brew pub location that was doing like all their like fun and innovative stuff.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, because they had some like barley wines and they had some really nice ales that were really cool and funky and
good imperial type.
Yeah, they even had some hoppy stuff that was really traveling a lot. But I think you're seeing that. Well, this is a topic again for another time. But you're seeing that happen to a lot of other breweries lately. Yeah. There's been talk of that in the industry where. We're going to start seeing some people.
Overall impressions?
I like it. I like the mouthfeel on it. I feel like that might be also to do with the wheat, too. But it's hard to tell for sure.
It's a bit strange for a lager to have, like, wheat in it, I thought.
Yeah,
Sorry, not strange in a bad way. Just interesting.
And I think this is where they try to be a craft brewery. Doing something a little bit different out of the norm and putting their own spin on it.
Okay,
move along. Next one.
Yeah, we gotta keep it quick. The next is the one I brought. The only reason I brought it was because I was at the store looking at labels, and it was the first one that had corn as a listed ingredient. This is by Fuggles and Warlock. They're out of Richmond, Vancouver. The beer is called Getting Fizzy With It. And this is a good topic because the style is brewed IPA.
Oh,
classic style.
That's oh yeah, yeah. If you define classic as within the last
5 minutes, it's very 2018.
Yeah, I looked all through the BJCP, couldn't find anything on brewed IPA. So, but I guess like we can all agree that the style is supposed to be basically. We know the process. You use enzymes to make sure that the wort is 100% fermentable. You can use the enzymes in the mash or in the fermenter or a combination of both. And it's basically kind of like a West Coast style IPA, but completely dry and probably lower in bitterness because it's so dry.
Yeah.
I would say that I haven't had a lot of good examples myself. Has anyone had a good, like a really good one?
I had a Crux one the other day that was fine, but it came off sweeter and I haven't really, again, it was kind of like a casual drinking, so we didn't analyze it too much, but it was one of the better ones I have. I still have another can of it too that I actually need to crack soon.
Okay.
I had one from Russell I thought was pretty good, but
they
massively hopped it, which I think helps a lot because a lot of them don't have a lot.
Was it the Hazy Little Brute?
Yes.
I actually really like that one.
Yeah, it was
a
good one.
I'm not going to lie, I have to revisit this again, but I really liked the Phillips one.
Yeah, it's pretty good too. Yeah.
The Brute Force, I thought it was dry. It had a bit of fruitiness when I drank it.
This beer smells awesome.
Yeah.
So the ingredients on this one are water, barley malt. They're listing it as one word. Rice, corn, hops, and yeast. So I guess they're using I'm putting words in their mouth here, but I'm guessing they're using both the rice and the corn as a means to dry out the beer and make it like lighter.
Right.
Did it say the enzyme? So I didn't hear.
Enzymes not listed as an ingredient, but normally people wouldn't list that on a casual beer label.
Yeah.
It also says 30 IBUs. Like we said, brewed IPAs generally have lowered IBU levels just to like if it's too dry.
If it's too dry, it's going to be
it's fairly pale yellow in color.
Mm-hmm.
Crystal clear as well, absolutely clear. I'm assuming they do, but because it says unfiltered, but I assume they use a centrifuge.
The ABV doesn't really change a lot in IPA, is it? It's
got a nice nose. It's kind of got like that dank tropical fruit, like bright citrus kind of thing going on.
Yeah, not getting a lot of corn.
It's not like my cornflakes.
No. It feels a little flat to me.
Yeah.
Like the carbonation wise, like I.
Not sparking something that says getting fizzy with it.
Yeah, wow. I know. Like, and especially the style. Like,
Think
of it as an amped up, like, you know, a normal beer would be like 1.5 volumes of CO2 generally. Mm-hmm. and like brewed IPAs, people are trying to push that like up, I think, like the 2.5 type thing.
Right.
But
I don't find it very dry.
No, and that, those are the two things I was going to say. It's not overly dry and not overly fizzy, which are the two kind of other hallmarks of the style.
More in the
aroma.
It's
really getting, though. It's really a getting beer.
It's pretty with it.
Getting with it,
yeah.
It smells fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
The hops smell great.
It's an enjoyable drink.
I
find this one fruitier, like those estery fruitiness flavors. I get more on this one than a lot I did from previous ones I've had. Especially like the Phillips one was dry.
I'd say that this is the okay. I haven't had disclaimer. I haven't had any of the brewed IPAs from San Francisco, so
yeah.
I have nothing to like. I've heard about the style, read about the style, haven't even tried brewing it yet. I'm still trying to taste a really good one.
Yeah.
For me, this is the first one I'm going to say that it finally hit the IPA part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, so the other ones, my problem of the other ones I've tried sometimes is that, like, yeah, they're dry and fizzy, but you still have to make an IPA, and it should still smell like an IPA, I hope. Right? Like,
yeah.
Dank, citrusy, tropical, whatever. Like,
this has the dank.
Oh, I know. That's why, like, at first I thought this is fantastic because at least it is an IPA.
Yes. Yeah. So many of them fall short of that.
Yeah. So yeah. I think if this was, like, slightly drier and, like, carved up a touch more, it'd be a great example.
Maybe it's just.
Yeah.
It could be just the bottle. Sometimes they. Also, sometimes, like, you know, your bottling line can't. Or your bottles or your caps can't handle that extra carbonation, so you just physically can't put out a beer at 2.5 volumes. In fact, a lot of the Belgian ones that are at that are all bottle conditioned.
Yeah.
So that would be a cool experiment to bottle condition a brewed IPA so that you in a champagne bottle to get it up to.
I was gonna say, isn't that the normal method for making champagne is to condition it in the bottle, and that's how they get that fizzy and nitro carb.
But champagne have you seen the method?
Yeah.
Method champagne was it's got like no but
it's a racket
and they have to turn it.
They actually turn
it. It's on racks.
They actually turn it,
yeah.
But they're actually banging it a bit too as they're turning it.
Yeah,
so
it takes like
the last. Yeah,
it takes like 40 days or something.
Oh god,
in a cold cellar, they just like what is it like an eighth of a turn a day or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
I'm just gonna say I don't see any local craft brewery doing that anytime soon.
Yeah, but we're seeing local ones doing it, which is super cool. Bella does that. Their traditional.
Unsworth does a Charme de Lille as well.
Which is probably one of the best sparkling wines in Canada.
Cool.
Yeah. But we're not talking about that right now.
Well, that's for our next podcast.
Sparkling wines in
Canada. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Where we each bring three sparkling wines a day.
Oh, dear.
Mine are just rosés. So.
Yeah.
I would drink this beer again, though. I would buy it. I really enjoy this beer.
It's nice. It's easy drinking too.
The one thing
you could take away—you could take away all the wording in this beer and just put it as an IPA.
Yeah, and it would be a good West Coast IPA, right? Yeah. The other thing you could do is on tap, you just crank the pressure on this keg, just carve it up to 3. You know what I mean? Like, you could change the serving pressure on the keg with CO2, and so maybe they can't bottle it at a high volumes of CO2, but they could sure serve it at a higher.
That's true.
Carbonation. Level of carbonation.
But will that dry it out more? It'll just be micro.
Well, there is a flavor to carbonation as well.
Yeah.
There's carbonic acid. So it will help the beer feel a little bit drier as well.
Yeah.
But I assume they, I don't know, like, this is it. Like, brewed IPA hasn't, for us anyway, here up here in Canada, it hasn't been around long enough. We haven't.
We've seen a lot of people attacking it now.
Yeah.
Or I didn't want to say attempting because people have done pretty good jobs with it. But really, like, there's no, I think we talked about this before, there's no really comparison for this beer.
Yeah.
There isn't really a flagship brewed IPA that you can compare that you're aiming to be like. Sierra Nevada is the only one that everyone, what's
isn't
what?
It Drake's in San Francisco?
Is that
there? Are they the one?
I believe they're the ones.
Okay.
And they nailed it?
I believe so.
Okay.
Dale Smith is coming up with one very soon.
We're going to myself.
Kegs are coming into town. It's called Brutiful Day or something like that.
Lovely.
Well,
they actually got champagne yeast for it, though, to use.
The Phillips one did that, too, right? Which
I think they
appreciated. But.
Yeah, I would, as a brewer myself, I argue you don't have to use champagne yeast. Like, you can do the things that you're supposed to do, dry it out with using enzymes and carb it to a higher level without having to use champagne yeast. But
I mean, if you're aiming for that style, that's what I always thought, is you want to get that dry yet still, like, ideally flonk flonk fruit forward flavor into it from the actual style of those brute dry. I don't know, that's where I thought the idea came from.
But. Yeah, I think that is. I mean, the next trend seems to be rosé, so.
Oh, yeah. Actually, well, side note, I had the steel and milk one the other day, and it was actually really good.
I have one down in the fridge right now.
I could get grasp onto that.
Constantly. I also saw that, which other big, Firestone Walker, I think, put out a rosé as well?
I think we're getting some, too. I think it's coming.
Okay, cool.
I was slightly off. Drake's made a lot of them, which were quite popular, but apparently the first example was San Francisco Social Kitchen and Brewery in late 2017. They were one of the first ones to make it, so.
Okay.
There you go. But still, yeah.
I like it as an idea, and I like it very much as, I think I was saying this a little while ago, but I love it as an antidote to the hazies.
Yeah.
Because I like a hazy IPA.
Yes.
But what I'm less fond of are the milkshake / lactose versions of
them.
There's
been some good ones, though.
Yes.
When it's done right, it's a really awesome beer.
Well, to me, when the milkshake ones are done right, it tastes like just juice.
Yeah.
But I remember
which is good. But
I remember getting like a witch milkshake, the blackberry one. And it had the most brilliant, vibrant, dark purple blackberry color.
Okay.
And it tasted like a blackberry creamsicle. Like, formidable, tart, creamy. It was a really gorgeous rendition of the beer. I've had the other ones, the pears and the pineapple, and a few other ones. That one was like, I wish I had, like, half a case of that beer to drink. It was really quite nice
okay.
product.
But all I'm saying is that the Brut IPA is a nice pendulum swing the other way.
Yeah, for sure. But bringing things back to our earlier flagship kind of thing, same time, like, a lot of brewers are like, hey, I made my Brut IPA. We're done. On to the next thing. Where, like, a lot of them are like, that's not great. Why don't you make that again and improve upon that recipe? You just don't see it here. And then you see some local breweries, and I'm not going to name any breweries, but like, oh, we're going to make a Brut pale ale now. And then there's a Brut like lager and a Brut saison. Like,
Pilsner.
You really don't need to make a Brut saison stuff.
Well,
with.
That's redundant.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
should
is
be
this thing just
going to
take all the liquid out of my mouth?
What you're saying
is like,
good because it's like people just, we made that style now and that's what we're going to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
See, I don't understand that because
that's what's happening.
Yeah, I would like to see just, yeah, people trying to make a better wine.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because there's room for Brut. I think people, like, you know, old school people are like, oh, these new Brut IPAs, like, oh. Like,
yeah.
And it's like, well, no, there's room for this. Like, this is a good idea,
it
I
is.
Think, on paper right now. And I think it can be perfected and made better. And yeah,
well,
like,
here's the question for you as a brewer, because as a chef, the recipe is never done.
Yeah.
So for a brewer, if you've made the recipe and you feel like you've locked it down, is it ever evolving? Is it ever changing? Because they feel like some people just, they have the recipes, especially with flagship beers, like that's it. They scale, they mash in, they brew, and then that's what, is that, it's like, or we did this and that's our beer, and then, you know. Is that
that's a really hard thing. Like, so if we're
talking, I don't know that part of the industry, that's why I'm asking.
Well, so if, the problem with answering that question is that if you're talking about home brewing or talking about professional brewing, those are two completely different answers.
I'm talking about professional.
I know, and I can't answer that because in the professional brewing, there are so many other variables. There is the company itself, the boss, the ingredient restraints, the all of that. If you talk about home brewing, that's what home brewers do, and that's the fun thing about being a home brewer is that, like, you're like, oh, I made a Brut IPA, but, like, I'm really unhappy. It wasn't dry enough. I got to try something new the next time, and so... Yeah, I'm...
But on a professional level then, because that's what I'm saying, is home cooks, they change the recipe here and there, actually. And with more chefs who work in a more structured environment, like, they want to have a standard recipe, but it should be evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. There's not many breweries that do that locally, and I know I'll get flamed because some people are like, Twin Cells flagship guy. But Twin Cells did that when they were early on. They're like, hey, we made this beer again, version 3, and we changed this in the recipe.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, well, why can't you make the same beer 3 times? Like, yeah, but no one's really doing that. They're just making the same.
And the ingredients are different every time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. So hops, which is, like, of these styles that we're talking about, are a huge component of the beer. And the different lots are all different. And the ones that you get in are all different depending on where they're grown, like, where they're sourced. Like, everyone wants to buy Mosaic, but
yeah,
all Mosaic is not created equal.
No.
Okay. We're moving on to the next beer.
Yeah.
Ed, what did you bring?
I brought,
for corn,
Brian picked out for me, a Strange Fellows Lord Barleycorn. Now, what this is a bourbon barrel-aged lager with corn and I think there's one other malt ingredient in here. They got a big old poem on the end.
Ears of corn, like, right in the barrel?
Yes. They bought some corns in the cob and threw that in there.
They're strange
barley
fellows.
And corn. Yeah, they're pretty strange fellows. But they aged it in Woodford Reserve bourbon barrels, which had previously been used for Boris.
Oh, this time.
Yeah. So they drained the Boris out and then threw that in.
And Woodford Reserve is a corn-based product, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Bourbon is,
right? It.
Oh, sure, Paul. God damn it.
You're going to have
So, essentially, this is this is a barrel-aged barley wine with corn in it.
Which percentage on that?
Sorry, I'm just trying to...
A sessionable barrel age?
Oh, yeah, sorry, it's only 6.5%.
Yeah.
So, I'm just trying to get a handle on the style.
It's interesting, right?
Was this a pre-prohibition kind of style they were trying to...
Yeah, it's supposed to be a prohibition lager style. But then they aged it in bourbon barrels just to really mess with things.
Oh, why not?
That it has an imperial stout in. It's like...
It definitely has, like, a stout flavor to it.
It does. I get that too, actually.
It almost, like, it looks blonde.
Yeah.
Like, it's a copper, like a light copper type color. It's crystal clear, white head.
I'm getting some of those smoky notes from Boris.
Yeah,
actually.
And that's what I was saying. Like,
which is kind of crazy.
Peat malt.
Yeah. I like that. There's not like, well, you get like a tiny bit of the vanilla from the bourbon, but just like,
this is a head trip because like, it's almost like a white stout.
It's crazily, it's crazily clean.
It's a very cool idea.
I'm getting a lot of roast flavors. In
the
pale beer, which is very strange. A lot of corn.
It's corn on corn.
Yeah.
No, it's really interesting. It's like smoky.
Yeah.
What do you say to the peat? Like
they say
it drinks more like
I don't get it. Yeah,
almost like you think
they say tobacco
in pilot barrels instead of like bourbon barrels.
Yeah,
they say tobacco on there, but I don't smoke, so I wouldn't know. But yeah,
you don't know what tobacco smells like.
No, but actually, my mom was a chain smoker. Oh Jesus!
Down Johnson Street for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's really cool though.
Yeah,
I think we got a real good,
a really nice beer.
Cross-section of that.
Yeah, I really enjoy this beer. It is not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah.
I expected it to be sweeter.
I'm happy
because of the
more of this.
No, because of everything else that they did into it. Like bourbon barrel age. Yeah, some of the corn, but I expected to be more condensed, more viscous, more, yeah.
That's the thing, though. Once you get like second and third use, it's like not too much of that bourbon's coming through, right? But,
well, I mean, a lot of the times the barrel's there not as a secondary fermentation vessel, but as a method to calm a certain beer down.
Sure, yeah, and let it sit and breathe.
And let the wood flavor get in there and actually mellow a somewhat intense product out. This is probably a good rendition of that. This is a really unique, but it is really awesome product.
In a way, though, like a corn lager, this is kind of giving it more character, really.
Well, the corn hasn't.
Well, no, but I mean the barrels have.
Yes.
Yeah, the barrels have just given
absolutely.
It, like...
So, in fact, I would say that the predominant flavor in the beer is the barrel.
Yeah. Big time.
Right? That's like...
But in essence, for most of the, for all three beers we've just had, corn hasn't really shone through in the beer.
No. And that's right. Yeah. It was a kind of joke.
We had, there was one, there was one beer that came out a while ago, and P49 put it out. It was called Corn Hops.
I remember that one, yeah.
And it was a corn, like on the cob was the character, but it was intensely corn flavored. It was like bright, vibrant color.
And they hopped the hell out of it too. They hopped the hell out of it, yeah. Remember it.
And they haven't made that in a really long time. I think that was kind of like a misunderstood product, but that was probably, and then when you look up on Rate Beer, like that's what you see as like one of like the top like 4 or 5 beers. For corn.
Oh, I didn't look at that. Yeah. Okay.
It was, there were one of them. The first beer was an Eclipse beer.
Eclipse.
Huh. Aged in a corn, some sort of corn barrel.
Wow. You know, once that Kellogg's...
Mellow corn barrel, whatever that means.
Once that beer made with old Kellogg's cornflakes comes out, we'll have to try that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There is a beer coming out.
Whose is that?
It's like Small Block, I think, up in on the island.
They're using but apparently like an AB and Bev one or something. They got like in...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was something in the news a while ago, but they got a deal with Kellogg's or something, I think. Maybe use like.
Do they teach them how to brew beer or what?
Ooh.
I love to hate beer.
It's true. It's true.
Well, on that note, I think we shall. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening.
We enjoyed the talks and we can try some of the beers that are out there. Most of them are in stores,
especially the beers.
You can follow me at How I Handle My Vices on Instagram. I also have a second one that promotes a lot of Canadian only beers at BeerCanRev.
And I'm on Instagram as EdK. I'm Twitter as EdK. Facebook is Bring Your Porter to the Slaughter and BringYourPorterToTheSlaughter.com. You can also see me weekly in What's Brewing for their hotline.
And I post as at Socks Cover Feet, but I also do most of the posting for Il Sauvage Brewing as well.
Socks with an X, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's probably the best Instagram handle I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah?
It's one of my favorites, okay. Yeah. Okay.